I just want to jump in from Hebrews 11, verse 32. And it says, Paul writing here, goes, what more should I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and whose powerful who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned, they were sawed in two, they were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskin and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. And the world was not worthy of them. And I think, you look through all that, it's amazing to think that a lot of those people in the Bible speaks about how, there's libraries that could be written of what Jesus was done. And there's moments here that Paul could have taken and written probably 50 or 100 more books and expanded on all the lives of these men that aren't even referenced. And I knew some of these when I was asked to preach, and there's some of these characters and names that I hadn't heard of. And so I jumped into the first one that I hadn't heard of, which was Barak. And as I started reading through and researching on Barak over the past couple of weeks, actually realized how much of my own story I can relate to in Barak. And so I've decided just to spend the next few minutes just talking a little bit about Barak and why I think he deserves his place in the Hebrews Hall of Fame. Please don't confuse him with Barack Obama. There's obviously quite a big difference, and there's obviously a different spelling. But from Hebrews 11, if we can jump, if you have your Bibles, jump to Judges chapter 4. Don't stress too much if you don't. I'm just going to jump around. I'm just going to read a few verses. But basically, after Ehud died, the Israelites once again did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Such a common pattern we see in the Israelites. And maybe not necessarily our own lives in terms of evil, but how sometimes we take God for granted and move on and then take God for granted and then come back. And so the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, a king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazar. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth Hagoyim. Because he had 900 chariots and had cruelly oppressed the Israelites for 20 years, they cried to the Lord for help. I've just been thinking, as Tom alluded to, the first last 3 or 4 years of our lives that seem to have been pretty tough, moving countries and learning new things and so on. I can kind of relate to 20 years of oppression. Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was leading Israel at the time. She held court under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the Israelites came to her to have their disputes decided. She sent for Barak, son of Abinon, from Kadesh in Naphtali, and said to him, "The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go, take with you 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun, and head and lead the way to Mount Tabor. I will lure Sisera, the commander of Jabin's armies, with his chariots and his troops to the Kishon River and give him into your hands." Barak said to her, "If you go with me, I will go, but if you don't go with me, I won't go." And I'll expound on a little bit more of the story as we go. But even just from that account, there's actually not much more to read about Barak in Judges chapter 4, other than the fact that he marched the men into war. And we'll touch on the results of that soon. But we do also have a whole bunch of stuff we can read about in Judges chapter 5, which is affectionately known as Deborah's Song. And it's the recount of the story. But just very quickly, what happened in summary was that Israel had been oppressed, as I mentioned, by the Canaanites, the king of the Canaanites, but Sisera was actually set up in camp inside Israel. He had a fortress in Israel, and he was actually responsible for effectively guerrilla or terrorist tactics in raiding the supply lines and making life difficult for the Israelites, and made it tough for them to move between north and south because he had set up kind of in the middle. He had oppressed them by stealing their crops and hindering their trade routes. Made it difficult for the country to be fed, to flourish, and to grow. And so the Israelites, they were forced into a sense of poverty. There was also clearly no leadership in place, other than, as we read there, that Deborah was set up And it, as a prophet, she was also then deciding disputes, which would also mean to kind of, in modern day sense, lead it towards being kind of an elder in the life of a church, in the life of the community. She was both a prophet and a lawbringer to some degree. And so she decides through a word from God, or obviously from God, hearing that, the suppression needs to stop. God is obviously always faithful. He always promised to the Israelites, if you do this, I will do this. If you don't do this, I will do that, as we've heard over the last couple of weeks. And these people of Israel cry out. God gives Deborah a word, and she summons Barak. Barak had to make a journey from north down to south, where Deborah was, through enemy territory, in a sense. So it just speaks to, firstly, of Deborah's authority, and also Barak's recognition of the prophet and the word of God coming to the people of Israel. He meets with Deborah. She tells him this lovely plan. As a military leader, he had a reputation as a warrior, as a commander of men. Potentially at first sight, this must have seemed like a little bit of a harebrained idea. 10,000 men, even against 900 chariots, especially in those days, is quite a tough ask. But Barak heeds the word of the Lord. He says to Deborah, I need you to come with. And they head back through this journey again, through the enemy territory, even though it's inside Israel, the country. They make it back. They summon the tribes of Naphtali and Zebulun. From there, they gather on the Mount of Tabor. This obviously incites the rage of Caesarea, and he mobilizes his army, including his 900 chariots. And as they head out to go to war, they come towards the river, and God causes an early spring. It rains to fall. Effectively, what happens is that the chariots are no longer effective. They can't. The plain below Tabor would have been where they would have engaged. On a flat plain, horses and chariots are going to outnumber and overrun any size army. And God effectively renders the strength of Caesarea and the strength of Canaan useless. In doing so, Barak and his men charge. They rout the armies. And it says that not a man is left alive. Further on from that, just in terms of the ending, Caesarea is actually killed by another lady called Jael. And she's responsible for luring or giving Caesarea rest. And while he's lying under a tent and potentially under almost effectively in a sleeping bag, she drives a very large stake through his head, fitting end to a man who had oppressed Israel. And so just very quickly, that's the summary of Judges 4 and Judges 5 and the story of Barak. So it begs the question, why does Barak get a mention in the Hall of Fame? I know before being asked to preach a couple of weeks ago, I'd actually never heard a preach on him. I'd read Hebrews 11, I never clocked him as a character. You always focus on the big five, the big guys before that, and David and a few of those guys. And as I said, as I've just researched and read into him, it struck a chord in my own life. And one of the things that I've just, a few things I want to point out that I just think make him worthy of his mention is his submission. First off, number one, to the call of God given by the prophet. It's ironic, and I'm very sensitive to how this might come about today, but so please just give me the benefit of the doubt on this. But in context of Hebrew times, it was the prophets, and especially in female prophets, weren't held in very high regard. It was a very much a patriarchal society at the time. And so for a battle-hardened military leader to be taking advice from a woman on battle strategy, on plans, and then submitting to that plan, it's for me is a really commendable and honorable first point of call to know about Barak. The plan potentially made no sense. As a military leader, he would have known that chariots and horses versus foot troops is never a good equation. But there seems to be that he understood the call of God. He understood the season that was in front of him. And as much as the messenger could have been offensive to him, he got hold and he gripped the message, and it resonated with him. And I think that led to faith in him, a faith built up. Point number two, I was impressed so much by his faith. He trusted the word given by God. He trusted the word given by the prophet from God and believed that it would come to pass. He was risking the lives of his men. He was risking the lives of his country, you know, and he was risking his own reputation. And he seems very comfortable to say to the prophet, you know, if you come with me, I know God will go with us. He also acted. I was impressed by this as point number three. He didn't acknowledge the word and wait for someone else to fulfill it. He had taken the journey to see Deborah and return home in terms of risking his own life before the mission had even started, before the plan had even come to action. He was already investing into it. He was already giving his life and risking his life just to meet the prophet and to meet with Deborah. He acted even further by staking his own reputation on the fact that he had been a successful general. He had won military battles before. And some of the stuff you can read through in Hebrews and Judges chapter 5, I haven't touched on it, but I am referencing from some of the songs in terms of how Deborah praises and speaks of the man of Barak. So we just don't have the time to go into all of that depth. So I am just, please, it's not just stuff I'm making up here. But he had to stake his reputation. He had to convince the other tribes to join him, to come into this effectively harebrained idea, as I like to call it, and believe and trust into God. So not only did Barak have to find conviction for himself, but he was able to convince and convict the men around him to join in this cause, to join in terms of the battle plan that God, and to embrace the challenge that God had put before them. The other thing that I was also struck by is that Barak actually had a very strong reputation. I love and I appreciate the stories of many other men of faith. You know, you think of Gideon, you know, he was the lowest of the tribe of Benjamin, of Israel. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing. And we all relate to the fact that when we are weak, God makes us strong. And I'm just struck also by the stage that actually this was a man's man. This was a military leader, you know, a general. He was battle hardened. He was brave. He was willing to do things that others weren't. And it was just amazing to see that even in that place, God was able to use him. I think sometimes we get struck up with gentle Jesus, meek and mild, and I fully appreciate and I love that and I know that. But for the season that God needed a man in this particular time, or a woman, you know, he had someone who had shown character, someone who had conviction, and it was someone with a strong reputation. And that's the thing is that makes me so unique, is Barak took all of that and he laid it down. As I said, I was struck so much by his submission. He laid aside the his own plans, his own thoughts on battle, his own thoughts on the strengths and weaknesses of his men. And he submitted to the plan of God and he embraced the outcome, whatever it comes. Deborah says, because he asked her to come with, that he wouldn't get the victory. So even before he left Deborah's side, he knew that the victory would go to a woman, and in terms of Jael being the person who slayed Sisera. You know, but he knew that even though he knew the victory wouldn't necessarily be his, he knew he could play a part in it, and he embraced that, and he accepted that. And I think that submission and that faith in the call and the plan of God in his life is one of the reasons why he was ultimately used to bring about a great victory. And I think Barak understood that. He said, even though it ultimately wasn't the plan that he would have gone with, Barak submitted to the plan that God had put before him. I was just thinking a little bit more about why maybe Barak had these convictions. And just from the research I was trying to do around the region and the time, it seems that the area where Barak had his men stationed and where he and his family and his tribe lived seems to be very close to Gibeon. Some of you might recognize the name from Joshua chapter 7 and chapter 6, where the Israelites are invading the promised land. They've just taken Jericho. They've just routed the town of Ai, however you want to pronounce that. The Gibeonites send a party, and they even though they were only a few miles up the road, they made it out as if they had traveled on a long, long, long journey. Their bread was stale. Their clothes were dirty. Their horses were old and worn. And they effectively tricked the Israelites, this powerful, massive, warring nation, into a truce. And the line that's always struck me out of that section of scripture was that as the Israelites make the truce, there's a one-liner, almost a throwaway in Joshua chapter 7, where it says, but they didn't consult the Lord. And as a result, you know, a few weeks later, the other nations in Canaan hear that the Gibeonites and a few of the other tribes and around that village have made this pact with the Israelites. And so they decide to go to war against their own countrymen, in effect, against the Gibeonites. And as a result, the Israelites are drawn into a battle that they shouldn't have been drawn into. They should have actually routed the Gibeonites. They should have moved on to the next army. But instead, they actually end up defending effectively the enemies from their enemies. And I just like to think that Barak, as a military leader, probably would have studied his history. He would have probably known of the story of the Israelites, you know, and how they had been deceived. And I just wonder if he knew that he needed to inquire of the Lord and hear from the Lord and trust in the Lord. And so when eventually the prophet calls him, I think he was already in a place where he knew that he needed to obey and hear the word of the Lord before he moved into action. And I think it's just an amazing character trait. Also think maybe perhaps he had studied the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, and understood the impact of perhaps of Deuteronomy 32:30, which says, one can put an army to flight, but two can send a legion fleeing. And I think perhaps as much as he was a military leader and as much as he was a hardened general, sometimes crazy plans or hairball ideas, you need someone else to stand with you. You need someone else of faith, you know, to be by your side. And even if it means you might not get the victory you think it is, at least you're getting victory. And I think even though he never got the honor of actually, because back in those days, you have to understand, you kings killed kings. You know, that was the mentality. And he knew he wasn't going to get that honor, you know, but he knew that there was still going to be a victory that was bigger than his own dynamic, bigger than his own identity, and bigger than his own career. You know, the people of Israel were going to be free. And for him, that was more important than his own reputation. And I think he was so willing to have Deborah come along that he was actually prepared to lose some of what might have been his reputation or his legacy. You know, his children's children maybe hearing the story going, oh, Dad, Grandpa, why didn't you just go out on your own? He's like, well, you know what? I've read my Bible. My Bible says that when two or more are gathered, there is victory. When two or more are gathered, we can set the legions fleeing. And, you know, I can stand here today saying that we've relied on King's House Church so much, Sarah and I, not just for ourselves, but for our community, for our family, you know, and when we rely on each other and we build with each other, you know, I just think it sets up unity. And the Bible says unity commands a blessing. Now, I appreciate that these things maybe aren't necessarily clearly stated, but I think for me, there's a commonality in the story that points to another character that ultimately came to free the Israelites and us, and that's Jesus. Jesus left heaven. Philippians 2 says he bankrupted heaven. He embraced and accepted God's plan, obviously as part of the Trinity. He was in that plan, but he still laid down and honored the Father in fulfilling the plan that God had for redemption. And ultimately, Jesus to this day sits at the right hand of the Father, pointing glory back to the Father. As much as they all exalt and glory each other and on perfect submission, and I appreciate and love the Trinity. I love how Jesus fully embraced a plan. The Bible continually references, I don't do what I want to do. I do what I see the Father doing. And I think Barak is an example of how he of an early Jesus. I know we can point to lots of other characters in the Old Testament and see how Jesus and then God weave those stories into Jesus' story. Ultimately, Barak yielded to the plan of God and laid down his own strengths and his own ambitions to ultimately see God's kingdom advance. And I think this is the challenge for us today. I've been saved, I was trying to work it out, I'm just going to go with over 25 years, or almost 25 years. And I just, if I comment, I see so many people interested in what God's doing in them and only for them. And I believe that when we move and add momentum to the community that God has placed us in, then everyone gets victory. We've been focusing and talking about APEST a little bit and some of the community trainings. And, you know, when each of us embrace the uniqueness and the challenges of the other gifts, you know, sometimes as an apostolic type entrepreneurial person, you know, I just sometimes want to get to the point and The teachers, you know, they're the amplified version of the Bible. It's just more and more and more and more. And sometimes it's like you want to clash, and you know, you want to tell the guys to hurry up and let's get a move on. And I'm saying that because I can pick on Julian because I know he loves me. it's actually not that we've clashed, so please don't hear what I'm not saying. You know, but you know, when we embrace the gifts that each one of us have, I'm not naturally an evangelist. You know, I'm not naturally a shepherd, but I learn from the shepherds in our community and I learn from the evangelists in our community. It makes me a better person. And I was just thinking in terms of when we lay our talents, when we lay the things that make us unique, like Barak's leadership ability before God's plan, ultimately God brings about the victory for Israel, brings about the victory for his people. And you can look at that selfishly and go, oh, yeah, but Barak, he never got the victory. Actually, Barak, I think he knew he had the victory, because for him, the victory was seeing the people of Israel free. And I think in our time, in our community today, it's seeing our church in Perth, in the Perth and Kinross Council, in the nation of Scotland, working together with all of our unique gifts, maybe slightly different pulls, slightly different leanings, but actually submitting the fact that I think we maybe should be hitting this harder or not hitting this as hard, but submitting where I can and playing my role in the picture of the community, that actually that's the lesson we take from Barak, that as we yield and we submit to the community that God's put us in, that actually as we do that, our strengths actually still get used. Our calling actually still gets fulfilled. Our dreams and our destinies actually still get worked out. Because when two or more you know, are together, we send legions fleeing. I know for me personally, because it's always good to kind of say, well, how do you anchor all this? It's quite funny, you know, you always, in my experience, when you step up to preach, you know, whatever might be on, God always challenges you before, you know, before you can preach the message. You know, the last 8 to 9 weeks in particular have been incredibly delicate within my own life, just in terms of stress and business. And we're actually in very close to the final stages of the sale of our cafe, praise Jesus. But it's been a very, very complex set of movements and things and chains and reactions in our life over the past couple of weeks. And I've actually relied on counsel from men that I respect, not just in the church here, but other men as well, godly men and men that I consider as fathers. And when I've wanted, and this is why I identify with Barak, is that his name actually means lightning, you know, and I'm a bit of a bull in a china shop type of person. If I can't get a nail into something, I just get a bigger hammer. You know, sometimes, you know, the solution that I've thought over the last couple of weeks that I should go, I've actually accepted the counsel of men who have seen the bigger picture, understand the kingdom and the community and the calling that I'm a part of. And they've advised most times, as much as I'm actually very grateful to admit this, contrary to my own natural reflexes or instincts in terms of how I should deal with the situation. And I've had to yield and trust the wisdom and advice of those men. Obviously, please understand, I'm hearing God and I'm calling out to God as well. And I'm not diminishing that role. But you know, when you're this close to a problem, sometimes it feels like you can't hear God. And sometimes you feel like God is far away, even as Tom touched on that at the start of our prayer. And having men sit around you who have a different perspective. And it's the hard thing is when the perspective isn't what you want. You know, it isn't what you were thinking. And the challenge for me has been to yield to the calling that God has placed us in, the community that he's placed us in, and to honor and respect those men and take that advice. I don't think we would be where we are, you know, with the last couple of weeks if I hadn't heeded. And I look back and not just the last couple of weeks, I find it quite ironic that God's given me two girls. I'm a hard as nails, rough exterior, and I'm learning to hug and kiss my girlies and dance stupidly and funnily in the kitchen. And you know, God knows what he has for me and the calling he has for me. And you know, I've had to yield to a wife who has a completely different perspective on life, and it's been my greatest joy to learn from her and lead with her, be a part of her life. You know, it's moved me. And that's the example Barak, and that's the challenge that Barak gives us, that it's actually to yield is actually strength when we yield in community. And as we lay down our lives and allow God to give us the victory, he will still use us. It's not going to be, I'm not going to be able to do it this way. But as we get challenged, as we embrace the challenge, as we heed the advice and the word of the Lord, whether that comes from, you know, the polka dots on the wall or the prophetic voice across the ocean, or, you know, your partner next to you, you know, or the council of wise men that you've committed and submitted your life to as a church and in community, God will use us and God will bring victory. And I think sometimes we forget that God actually is about bringing us victory, because sometimes we can't see through the clearing, and it helps to have people around us that will speak to us. But it takes the boldness in this community, this country, and I'm not this country, this culture that we live in is I've always got to have the answer. I've always got to know the right thing. I've got to say the right word. I've got to look the right filter on Instagram, and it's got to have the right hashtag. And you know, actually, when we yield to God, he'll take care of the rest. And that's why I think Barak is worthy of a mention in the Hall of Fame, because he's an example to us to submit our talents to God and follow where God will want to take us.